Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. If you're watching out on our YouTube channel, I'm sporting my Coons Ford gear. I'm in the Coons Ford Bronco. Dennis is giving me this beautiful blue Bronco that got stopped twice on the way down to Ocean City. I'm going to be down the shore all week broadcasting in and out. You'll hear some segments around here about things going on at the beach and the crab cake tour. Had my first crab cake at Suicide Bridge in Hurlock, Maryland. I had never heard of Hurlock, Maryland. I didn't even know where it was or it existed. About a dozen people told me, you got to go to this place called Suicide Bridge. I said, it doesn't sound like a friendly place, but it was. It was very friendly. They were playing country music and AC/DC, and the crab cake was phenomenal. Go check that out on my Facebook as well as Twitter and at BaltimorePositive.com. Luke Jones joins us now. You know, we're going up and down a river on Jimmy Smith and the defense, Justin Houston, and the vaccines, and Lamar Jackson, and practices, and fireworks, and all that stuff. A couple of things. I'm crab caking here this week in Ocean City. I want to talk some Ocean City because you're in Wildwood. Before I get to baseball, because I want to do a baseball thing, you know, I'm a rock and roll guy. Might be the only chance I get to do this. But, man, I'm on vacation, and I just started chatting about music. He was wearing a Grateful Dead shirt, and we got into this and that, and John Mayer and music, and the Bruno Mars concert I'm taking my wife to this week. And so we talked to music a couple days later. I see him. Hey, man, did you hear about Dusty Hill from ZZ Top? And I'm like, what? So, you know, Dusty Hill was so nice to me. Like, of all the musicians ever, he and Billy Gibbons, just two of the tremendous, Frank Beard too, but Dusty and Billy were like, when I was a music critic, they took me backstage at the Capitol Center and had a post-game spread that was like a state. They had food. We sat down. We talked. Tape recorder. They were kind to me. They let me wear their sunglasses and stuff. They were very – Billy Gibbons can't see. There was like Coke bottle bottles. But so a little shout-out to ZZ Top and my love for that band Rough Boy, one of my favorite songs. But Luke, I want to talk baseball with you because we did football. And we did a little Ocean City. I'm going to be at the beach here. You know, I remember coming down. I've been coming to the beach my whole life. And I have the mayor on this week. I'm going to have a whole bunch of business leaders that own all sorts of things down here at the beach. And secrets, all that, right? And I remember coming down here in the 70s. It was baseball. You know, the Colts were not something you thought about in July or August. It wasn't a season. It was seasonal. You know, I would come down here and listen to Chuck Thompson, try to get the games on from the Salisbury station. Sometimes Channel 16 would have a game. Then Home Team Sports. I famously tell the story of being in this steakhouse when Ben McDonald came through the bullpen, you know, in 89 in Memorial Stadium. I have all of these baseball memories at the beach. I'm down here this week. I don't think it's going to be that way. But last week, taking a vacation week around the trading deadline, I can't say that I put a lot of thought into what big names were going to go where, who was going to be a buyer, who was going to be a seller. But I have this wide swath of humans in my life, right? And especially on Facebook, all right? And I have friends that are diehard Cubs fans. I have friends that are like crazy Nationals fans and crazy Dodger fans and Yankee fans, all of that, right? But the Cubs fans and the Nationals fans – the couple of days on my, I kept looking down and Max Scherzer's crying and his wife's crying. Trey Turner's crying. His wife's crying. And everybody in the Cubs universe is crying. And, you know, I guess baseball always sells off in July. Like, you know, we've been through all this with the BJ Suroffs and the, like all of that Messina, all that 20 years ago. Right. But it still is a little jarring, right? I mean, if you're just add on Twitter to the amount of movement and the kinds of players that are moving. And to your point, and you said this a million times, and I'll give you the oxygen on this now that I've soliloquied a little bit. But you said the deals are really hard because no one wants to give up real prospects. You're not getting Adley Rutschman from anybody for renting Max Scherzer or whatever. But it is amazing these deals still happen, the amount of money and the prospects. And I guess the good spot of the general managers to make these deals because they're very weirdly lopsided in a time capsule as to what the value now versus the future. And it was always that way. It was that way with Alex Ochoa. But then there's the money part of it. The money has gotten so large for not starting the clock of an Adley Rutschman or a D.L. Hall or Grayson Rodriguez versus throwing a guy like that in a deal, right?
Yeah, and what's interesting is we actually saw some pretty big prospects. I mean, Nick Madrigal comes to mind right away. You know, and some of these deals, we haven't seen a whole lot of that in recent years. And do I think it's a, you know, the start of a new trend? Probably not. But I think maybe it's a sense of, and maybe it's teams, you know, certain teams,
how they profile. July 31st, when you have a chance, you take it, right?
And
if
also,
the Orioles ever get there, they would have to take that chance, right?
I think, right. And I think what's also interesting, and, you know, not to get too much into this, because there's so much unknown, and we're not going to know very much for a while here. You do have an expiring CBA also. So are there teams that are expecting how we view young minor league prospects, where you delay the service clock, you call them up, and then you have 6 years of club control, you delay that first year, you kind of sort of get that extra year. Is that going to be how it looks with the new CBA? Or are we going to see players start to have 6 years period from the time they're drafted or signed as an undrafted minor league free agent? You have 6 years, and hey, you can keep them in the minors as long as you want, but they're going to become a free agent at the end of this specific season. I don't know if teams are reading the tea leaves that much, or it's just the urgency to, when you have a chance to win, you have a chance to acquire some proven talent, when you have a certain need that you must add to your club in a tight race. I mean, you look at what the NL West has been. It's been an amazing race. The Giants have been such a good story. The Dodgers, I mean, they get Max Scherzer and Trey Turner and some other guys, and it's just incredible. And the Padres,
they have
who,
money.
You know, but they're also a really good farm system, and they've been able to trade away guys. I mean, you think about
the Yusniel Diaz, the Dean Kramer.
Well, but if you remember, it was the Alex Verdugos and guys, Dustin May and some guys like that, that the Orioles were hoping to get for Manny Machado. Well, he's a rental, so they had to settle for who they got. And well, it doesn't look so good 3 years into this whole thing. But you know, it was just a lot more movement than it felt really chaotic in that way and fun. But on the flip side, as you mentioned, bringing it back to the Nationals and the Cubs, that's very much a reminder of where the Orioles were 3 years ago. Now, the difference, the Nationals reached the pinnacle. The Cubs reached the pinnacle in 2016. The Orioles
makes it even harder to see
Rizzo
in a Yankees jersey if you're a Cubs fan.
Oh, it does, but I think you'd like to say you could put
Anquan Boldin around here.
you'd like to say you could put the positive spin on it and say, "Hey, we got to the top of the mountain." And yeah, that's true, but you have a little more of an attachment, as you just mentioned. We still lament Anquan Boldin being traded in these parts.
I feel a hell of a lot better about Andrew Miller if things worked out.
Yeah, sure. I mean, hey, that, you know, you look at that trade. I mean, Andrew Miller did exactly what the Orioles hoped he would do. He pitched great for them. Eduardo Rodriguez blossomed into what the Orioles hoped he would be, but they had to give up something. So, you know, for what it was at the time, it's tough to say the Orioles got it was a bad trade as far as what they got in return, but the long-term value, clearly the Red Sox maximized that. And that's what these deals are all about. You're looking at what are you getting in the short term? And in some cases, when it's a guy that has a couple years of club control, yeah, you're getting something that's going to help you right now and also for the next year or two. But in most cases, it's a rental, maybe one extra year, and you're weighing that value that you're going to get, you know, whether it's two wins above replacement for the final 2.5 months, you know, and not counting the postseason, against theoretical value. And that's where some of these deals are so interesting. And you know, to see some actual real legit top 100 type prospects actually move in this deadline, it was interesting to see. But you know, if you're the Cubs, you're the Nats. I mean, it's funny. And this is where I'll make an Orioles comparison. You think back to the Cubs with Theo Epstein and where they were 7 years ago, you know, when they acquired Jake Arrieta and the Orioles wanted Scott Feldman. You know, clearly that didn't work out. But when the Cubs were in that kind of full rebuild mode, and much in the same way the Astros were, you know, it's always sold as a lot of pain now, but we're going to avoid having to do this again. And then, well, 7 years later, it feels like the Cubs are doing that again. You know, it is bittersweet in that way. And that's why if you don't win a World Series, like the Orioles were in that position 3 years ago, having not gotten to the mountaintop, it's tough. And you know that there's going to be some pain. I mean, look at the Nats. I mean, the number of players they moved from Scherzer, Trey Turner, Brad Hand, Daniel Hudson, Josh Harrison, you know what, Yan Gomes. And yeah, you get this list of young guys back and you're excited because it's something new. And hey, there might be some really good players that Mike Rizzo was able to get for some of those guys. And yeah, Max Scherzer's got an expiring contract, so it made sense when you're not contending to move on. But doesn't mean it makes it any easier in the present and that uncertainty for moving forward. So yeah, you have all these young guys that you can point to, and you've got a generational player in Juan Soto that I'm assuming they're going to hand him a blank check and say, hey, you want to sign on for the next 12 years? You can play for whatever you want. I'm guessing he's going to get one of those deals because he's that special of a player, but you got to have other pieces around him. And that's where, you know, if you're a Nats fan, not that I'm crying the blues for a team that's 2 years removed from winning a World Series, but that's why the trade deadline can be that bittersweet.
I thought it was the MLB, not NFL, time. Not for long, right? Like literally, yeah. Right?
Well, and like I said, I'd love to hear, not that any of these general managers would say it right now, because, you know, from a PR standpoint, they certainly wouldn't want to say it, but I'd love to hear if maybe some teams were a little more willing to move a couple more prospects, not knowing what the value of that's going to look like with a new CBA and potentially a work stoppage next year. I mean, there's...
Well, you know, we talk about this a lot with the Ravens, and I know we talked about it with Justin Houston signing here and the pedigree and the reputation of the organization, but if you are of the mindset that I need to win now, and I don't want to say Buck and Dan would have been in that circumstance, but they certainly, I mean, you know, Buck wore out Matt Wieters. Buck wasn't worried about Matt Wieters' knees 3 years from now or anything 3 years from now. Buck's worried about winning today, and today's all we got. And I always tell you about all these football people we see year after year at the combine where, you know, every 2 or 3 years, their colors, their sweatpants change, everything changes. You know, baseball's had some stability and leadership. It feels like Shapiro's going to be in Toronto for a while. It feels like Elias is going to be here for a while, like 2 or 3 more, 4 more years. It's not like anything's imminent for anybody's getting fired at the end of this year. So when you have more rope, cool. When you feel like it's here and now because you don't have rope, and you never have rope when you're in New York. Right. You probably never really have rope when you're in LA or Chicago. I mean, Chicago, you've already thrown out Madden and Theo Epstein. We talk about bleeding hearts for Rizzo. They threw out the whole aorta of the program before any of that. Right. So making those decisions is also about ownership and about the baseball leadership saying, we want to win this year. We think we can get lucky, as they say. Right. And be that team that the Nationals were. The Nationals had better teams over the course of years. They had incredible hard luck, awful losses in October. And that seems to get like erased, you know, when you have that, when you have the parade and the feel good as to the disappointments that are there and the chances that are taken along those disappointments. And to your point with the Orioles, chances they took, chances they didn't take, signings they made, signings they didn't make. But at the end, playing for now is different than saying we're going to play for 2 or 3 years from now, which it always feels like Tampa's always playing for 2 or 3 years. You know, like even though when they're in it, it feels like it's more long term. And the Ravens the same way. The Ravens never give away drafts. Derek DaCosta is always thinking I'm going to be here in 2024.
Well, but part of that is also when you're going to be here in 2024, it does allow you to take a calculated risk at a certain point in time. I mean, the Ravens gave up a third round pick for Yannick Ngakoue for half a season. Didn't do a whole lot for them.
Yeah.
I mean, but
in another organization, that would be a bad deal. Here, it's.
I would say, I mean, did it work out for you in the way that you envisioned it? No. Do I think it was a bad deal? No, because you have to always look at a deal in terms of the information you have at that point in time. Yes, there's projection involved, but in the same way that if someone wanted to trade you, if you had a let's say a good number two, number three starting pitcher, and someone wants to trade you 3 top 100 picks for that guy. You might love that guy. You might say, you know what? We'd love to extend him. But if they overwhelm you with such great value, but then 5 years from now, one of the pitchers blows out his arm, another guy ruptures his Achilles and or ACL or just weird stuff. We know weird things happen. You don't know. That's why it's unknown. It's the future. But you make those decisions based on the here and now. That's why I have no problem with even now knowing that Yannick Ngakoue is a Raider. I'd still do that deal at the time, knowing, not knowing what, how it would play out, but knowing what they needed at that point.
If that third round pick is one of the bust wide receivers, or whether it's another Matt Judon type of player, right? Like literally.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. I mean, that's just the way it works. And it's the same, I mean, with prospects. I mean, you can't, it's really easy to talk about risk aversion to the point. And this was the Ravens' issue at wide receiver. I really think that. And Eric DaCosta's kind of acknowledged a little bit. And then we can kind of parse that and say, okay, was that Ozzie? Well, Eric was it's not like Eric had no pull and influence with the draft. I think organizationally speaking, they were risk averse at the wide receiver position because it was a volatile position. Now we've seen them, and how much of it has to do with Lamar Jackson or a better salary cap or just the way the game has changed in analytics, they are taking more swings. Now, Rashad Bateman might not work out. Marquise Brown to this point has looked good at times, and other times he's had periods where you say, it hasn't been what you'd hope, but you got to do it. And that's what these teams that are either on the brink of trying to make a World Series run or a playoff run, or these teams who have reached the end of their course, or in the case of the Orioles, where you're in the midst of a rebuild, and even though they only ended up moving Freddie Galvis for a minor league pitcher who, you know, maybe winds up in their bullpen at some point in the next couple of years, but you know, doesn't have a particularly high ceiling. And look, it's Freddie Galvis. You know, you weren't going to get a whole lot for a guy like that. But that's why you look at a moves like that, which are kind of really easy to make. But as we talked about with John Means, with Cedric Mullins, I mean, these are guys that have 3 more years of club control. Now, doesn't mean they won't move them at some point 6 months from now or a year from now or 2 years from now.
Well, your point, let's go back to Machado. Their value will never be higher. Cedric Mullins' value, you never have more tread. He said, but then are you getting that value? Does the world perceive him as Al Bunbury the next 4 years?
Right. Well, there's that as a guy who 2 years ago was in double A because he was struggling so much. So you have executives who say, all right, we're not really sure how real this is. I mean, Mike Elias and Brandon Hyde and company might be saying, we're not sure how real this is.
All of Cedric
Mullins has had an amazing season.
Yeah.
Well, but that's why you hold on to him then. And then maybe a year from now, if he's the same guy at that point, you still should be able to get something great for him, or you're hoping you've seen enough signs from your system and other guys that you might say, hey, this is a guy we want to keep, and this is a guy we might actually look to extend now.
You know what, Buck,
the circumstances change. The variables change.
Buck had a name for that, right?
Yeah, he might be a nugget.
He might be a pile diver.
So, you know, so circumstances change with all these guys, and that's why, you know, I mean, I saw some people, you know, some fans disappointed they didn't move guys, and, you know, I mean, look, you can only make the deals that are presented to you. I mean, you can value a player in a certain way, and you have conviction like that, and you should. You better have a good idea what kind of value your player has. But if you don't get that from other teams for whatever reason, whether it's you don't believe he's real, or John Means, you know, he's kind of had the shoulder issue, you know, although he pitched well over the weekend, it was good to see. But is a team giving you max value for what you feel it should be? If the answer is no, you hold on to him because you're not at a point where that guy's hitting the open market. You have some time here. You have an opportunity to maybe not max value, but something really close to it. Or he might be even better next year, and you might get even more than you would have thought this year. I mean, all these circumstances change, and these players don't stay the same. I mean, Cedric Mullins is a great example of that. You know, we've mentioned Yusniel Diaz, who 3 years ago looked like a guy that was going to be on the fast track to the majors, and now he can't stay healthy and has been abysmal at AAA. So, you know, and that doesn't mean his story's over, but right now it looks different than it did a year ago or 2 years ago. So, you know, that's what makes the trade deadline so much fun, because all of the factors are always at work 12 months out of the year, 365 days out of the year. But you get down to deadlines, and Andrew Brandt, someone I know that you're fond of in the football world, he talks about it all the time. Deadlines spur action. And, you know, the trade deadline, we certainly saw plenty of action. And, boy, just some big names changing teams and some surprising situations. And, again, looking at the Dodgers, who are defending world champs. They've been to the World Series. They've won NL West every single year, it feels, for a long time. And yet they're looking up at the Giants, who have been a great story, and the Padres are still, you know, hanging around, just trailing those teams a little bit. So it was fascinating to see the activity there. And, you know, see what the Yankees were able to do, as much as that it's been a disappointing season there. And it's funny you mentioned that job security not being a thing in New York. Well, it has been for Brian Cashman, amazingly. And, you know, we'll see if that changes. But he certainly, you can tell he was feeling the heat to make some moves. And whether it works out for them or not, we'll see. You know, I think the Rays, you know, with them having you know, flex their muscles and the Reds at the Red Sox expense here recently, it's you know, it's gonna be fun to see over these last couple months. And meanwhile, the Orioles, well, are playing out the string, and you know, you hope to see some more young guys here and there and some flashes here and there. And Matt Harvey looks like Matt Harvey again. Imagine that. But you know, certainly wasn't in enough time to expect to pull off a trade for a guy who, you know, has been pretty performance pretty ugly over the course of the season. But hey, they're playing better since the All-Star break. I don't know what it really means other than, hey, you like seeing Ryan Mountcastle do good things and Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Trey Mancini over the next, you know, 12 months to, you know, through the end of next year. Do they move him this winter? Do they approach him about a short-term, you know, more modest extension, a Mark Trumbo contract, as I've, you know, thrown that out there before. I mean, who knows? But he's an Oriole for now. And as I said, from a fan standpoint, that's not a bad thing. Because again, I don't know. I was skeptical what Trey Mancini was going to bring you in a deal. And clearly Mike Elias did not see a deal that made it attractive enough to do that, knowing the fan backlash you're going to get for obvious reasons.
More Trumbo and less Chris Davis and Glenn Davis, for that matter. He is Luke Jones. Yeah. He's Luke at WNST.net. I'm on the Crab Cake Tour. I'm on the Eastern Shore all week long, headed back to Baltimore. Talk about baseball. I'm going to be doing Shohei Ohtani. That is going to be a Baltimore day on the 24th, later on in the month, as the Anaheim Angels of California, of Los Angeles, come to Baltimore with the greatest show on earth at this point. You can find Luke on the Owings Mills practice fields all week long, sweating it out. No more two-a-days, but it feels like he's there twice a day. You can check him out, Luke at WNST.net. He's also on Twitter, Facebook, and if Lamar Jackson gets COVID again, we'll get that text out to you first on the Coons Report WNST text. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. The Crab Cake Tour rolling on at Baltimore Positive.